Hello and welcome to Terrifying Robot Dog. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we're here to talk about how technology is changing the way we interact with the world. That seemed funny? Did you get in the background?
I did. Someone's amused by this.
Yes, the top of every hour, my neighbor gets a new client and they laugh it up for about 5 minutes. So that'll probably go away soon. All right, this week we are going to talk about how technology is affecting the way we interact with the world in a variety of ways. Things like CSS, new Facebook announcements, maybe we'll touch on Spectre and Meltdown, all sorts of things.
Just a plethora of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Please stay tuned. Terrifying Robot Dog is next. Boop, 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 boop. Welcome back.
Did you miss us?
We missed a week, yeah.
Yeah, we did. We did. Stuff happened. I don't even remember what now.
Yeah, it was just crazy.
Yeah, I think you were just really busy, and I was really busy.
Mm-hmm. You know what? It was one of those weeks, one of those rare weeks when I have to, like, I had one day where I had to go somewhere, and it took the entire day out of the office. I was in the car, and it just like nukes everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get spoiled working remotely all the time when you have to like sit in traffic for 4 hours. It's like, how do human beings do this?
Right.
Every day. It's just the most infuriating place to put yourself. I don't know.
Yeah, it makes you wish you had a driverless vehicle so you could do something else during that time.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes me, like, even though I... Right,
record a podcast.
Right. It's actually pretty good acoustics inside the car. Not as many people yucking it up next door. Cool. Well, there's just a lot going on. It's almost like, I think we've said it before, it's almost like this stuff is, the news is just sci-fi, basically. I don't know how sci-fi is going to keep up. What does a sci-fi author do now that's not going to come true in 5 years?
Right. That's not going to go from, like, suddenly your science fiction turns into, like, alternate history.
Right. I was talking about, what was it? The Chinese social credit score. Actually, no, this came in from a dear listener, which, by the way, thank you folks for sending in emails about episodes. It's extremely encouraging. We've been getting more of them, and I really like it.
Yeah, we have been. We've been getting more of them, and we've been getting some feedback on Facebook and that sort of thing as well.
So. Yeah, so and so one of the dear listeners wrote in with pointing us in the direction of Woofy, which is a sort of a social currency that was dreamed up by the mind of Cory Doctorow, who I'm a huge fan of. And yeah, it's real now. It's real. So, you know, it's not exactly the same, of course, but the concept, it's weird because, you know, I'm of a certain age where I grew up watching the original Star Trek series and clearly the gadgets that were in that show informed gadgets that were created in the real world. Maybe it was coincidental. I don't think so. But, you know, the communicator especially. And it's like life is imitating art in that case. But now the progress is happening so quickly that the things are getting so close that it's kind of like, well, which came first?
Right.
We were just going through the subreddit for futurism, and it was like, whoever's making Black Mirror must be reading this, because half the headlines are episodes from, you know.
Yeah, they feel like they could be.
Ostensibly a fiction program.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, some of them are like, oh, there was an episode about that. There was an episode about that. Yeah, I saw like three things in there. And now I'm like, which came first?
Right. Yeah, I can't. I don't know if we said this on the show, but I tried to catch up with Black Mirror, and one episode just freaked me out so bad I rage quit. I was like, I can't watch this show anymore. I can't do it.
The show basically broke you.
I was like messed up. That San Junipero episode just totally screwed me up. I was like, uh-oh, death spiral. So, yeah, I can't do it. Anyway, so, but and why? Because it's like so real. It was totally a futuristic episode. absolutely not a technology that exists right now, but so easy to imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, you could imagine that being a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there is an episode later in season 4 called Metalhead that has actual terrifying robot dogs.
I might have to lift my boycott for that one.
Yeah, it is probably the weakest episode of the season, and it doesn't have it's just like straight up sci-fi horror. It doesn't really have much of a mind-bending plot or any major twist to it.
Cool.
So
I can handle that.
If you want an episode that's its main strength is that it has some cool looking terrifying robot dogs, then
nice.
You know.
Yeah, that's good, because my mind apparently is not that flexible, because when someone bends it, it wants to break.
Yeah.
So let's talk about CES.
Okay.
Let's back out of that rabbit hole for me.
Yeah, that was a lovely, smooth segue there, so let's go ahead.
Why, thank you. So Consumer Electronics Show 2018 took place in Las Vegas this month. I guess as we record this, we're still in January, aren't we?
Yeah, just barely.
And the news that struck me the most was the complete proliferation of voice in everything. That was a main theme of the show. According to people who were there, a main theme of the show was that Alexa and Google Assistant were in everything. Even if it wasn't part of the thing, just to run the demo, they would use voice control. Mm-hmm. So, and there have been, I've never been to CES. Have you ever been?
No.
But it's pretty common for people who have been to many, or, you see the news, the headlines that come out of it, and then a year later, it's gone. 3D TV, that was 1 year thing. And, one year there was just virtual reality booths set up everywhere. There were none this year.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the reports that I read that went back, people had been going for years and years, listed all sorts of sort of trends like that and flash in the pan kind of technologies. But so the big question is voice one of those things? Is it just going to be 3D TV was 2 years ago or whenever that was? Or is it going to be more like HDMI or Wi-Fi, which just was new 1 year, and there's a booth, look, Wi-Fi, it's a thing.
Yeah.
If you can even imagine that. And then
wild.
The next year, it's in everything, everywhere. And it's I remember where I was when I first saw a Wi-Fi sticker on a Starbucks. And I was I went inside, I'm what's Wi-Fi? What is this?
Yeah, Wi-Fi.
And they were and I remember it was a hotspot. I'm that doesn't even sound good. They're it's a hotspot. I'm that sounds dangerous, kind of. What?
Should I get away?
Yeah. Lasers. But that was 2003. Because I remember it was right after I moved to Atlanta. And that was that's not that, God, it is actually is kind of that long ago.
Yeah, it kind of is.
Feels like it wasn't.
15 years ago, wow.
I mean, I remember it yesterday, but I can't remember yesterday, though.
Oh, my God, it was 15 years ago, and I said, no, wait, it has to be less than 15, because Kira's only 15. No. No. She's turning 16 in a few months.
Cooper turned 8 today, actually, and I was like,
oh wow, happy birthday.
Yes, I'll let him know. But yeah, he is a post-Atlanta acquisition, so it's wow, it's been at least 8 years since we lived in Atlanta. Anyway.
Yeah, just those moments that hit you as a parent.
Mm-hmm. So voice, is it going to be more like Wi-Fi or 3D TV?
I think it's going to be Wi-Fi for sure.
For sure. Yeah, for sure.
I think it already is.
Right. I'm always overly optimistic about this kind of technology is going to, paying with your phone. That's going to have, I've been saying probably since 2012, this is the year everybody starts paying with their phone. And Apple's pretty much perfected it. With the Face ID thing, it is great. But still, I'll be the only person at a cafe that's ever used it. They'll be oh, wow, you've got Apple. You're the only bionic person we have here. So it's really not that widely adopted, it seems. It's not you look around anywhere you go, and 95% of the people have a phone in their hand currently, but probably looking at it. And of those people, evidently very few of them are paying with their phone. The only place I really see it happen regularly is at Starbucks, and they're not even using, and they're just scanning a barcode. So, what was I going to say? Oh, so the point there is that even though we, you know, I think we both agree that it's definitely going to be a foundational technology that's going to be inside everything. We could be skewed, but then I look at the way the kids use the computers, speaking of kids, and they talk to them all the time. It's extremely natural, and it works really well. And that's just what they do.
Yeah, there are, I'm just thinking of all the people I know, all my friends and what have you. And I mean, it could just be the friend group, but still, even among family and stuff, there are very few people who don't have either a Google Home or an Alexa device. Or even maybe even just like a Fire TV that has Alexa in it or something like that. There's I'm trying to think, and I can only think of like one or two people.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely know people that don't have it, but they all know about it. So that's interesting. And I don't get a lot of, I do every once in a while get somebody who's like, I don't like the idea of having a connected microphone in my bedroom or my living room.
And yeah, like, I don't get that a lot.
I don't get it a lot, but I have heard it once or twice. So I'm like, okay, people are kind of cool with this. You know, it's not like Google Glass that just had this huge public outcry. People were against it.
Well, and, because it had a camera. If Alexa had a camera, no one would buy it.
Oh, isn't that weird? I guess. Yeah, speaking of a Black Mirror episode.
Yeah.
So, yeah, whatever the reason is, I don't know. I'm like, yeah, camera's a little bit worse, but it's pretty bad. Like, both of them are pretty bad. If you really want to talk about, if you really care about privacy, they're both horrible. So
yeah. Like when you said you'd overheard like the Zencastr window reload, and you overheard me and Kira talking, and it's like,
it's super.
What did he say? What did he hear?
How do I stop this? Yeah.
Like, and none of it was anything I would want to keep from, you know, like anything worth hiding. It was just like, you know, stupid inside jokes and family things, and you know.
Yeah, no, I didn't. Creepy. It's a bad privacy thing to have a microphone in somebody else's house. Like even,
right.
I mean, again, to keep harping on the kids angle, we had a baby monitor that would pick up our neighbor's baby monitor. But you know, usually you're not standing around your baby monitor talking. But when they would go to talk, like to talk, to put the kid to bed, or if they were in the room like folding clothes or something, you could hear them talking on our baby monitor.
Yeah, we used to go around for fun when I was a kid and just see how many open baby monitors we could find and listen to. And it wasn't like we stayed long for eavesdropped or anything. It's just like, oh, there's one, just to see how many we could find.
Right, and it's like, it's a bad privacy violation. Like having a microphone is really bad. It seems like most people don't really think about it too much. They don't really care. Some people do. Most people don't seem to. So yeah,
I think a lot of people just trust that it's only listening when you say the keyword, trigger word.
Yeah.
But it has to be listening a little bit before that. So, I mean, it has to be always listening.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
And I believe that I am starting to suspect this can't be true, because there have got to be security hackers all over this thing, but that light comes on at weird times, and it's probably just confirmation bias. But if Erica and I sit, like where we sit to eat dinner, there's an Echo Show right behind us, right behind her, so I can see it right over her shoulder, and it's really obvious when it starts listening because it's pretty bright. And it's happened on numerous occasions when I'll say something like, you know what I like? And it starts, the blue light comes on, like it starts listening. And I'll be like, no way, she just came on. And then we'll like retrace our steps, like, what did you just say? Could it have possibly thought you said Alexa?
Yeah, I've gone through that. And you know, it's funny when that stuff happens. Like we've had it happen too. And then I'll pull up the app to be like, okay, go to the history and like, okay, what did she think I said? Because, you know, maybe it's something she misunderstood as Alexa, and it'll be like, it'll either just be not there, or it'll be like translation not available.
Yeah. So it's okay. I guess the overall point is that most people don't seem to worry about it, even though it is a, could be spooky if you thought about it too hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like we're sitting here right now and we're looking at our Alexas with the red rings, mm-hmm. and I'm thinking, does that mean she's really not listening, or does it mean she's just not responding?
Right. Is that either her ears or her mouth?
Yeah.
So, okay. So if you take that, the general lack of public outcry is basically the angle there, and how, you know, that a generation of kids who have been talking to the web since day one and talking to the App Store and talking to wherever else they're searching for things before they know how to spell, you know, the TV is another one, then it's going to be, it would be unnatural. You want to see unnatural? Watch a four-year-old try and work a magic mouse or even a regular mouse. They're looking all over the place. They're looking down at their hand and they're trying to like map the, you can see them trying to build the mental map of what's going on there. And that same kid 2 years earlier had no problem whatsoever with an iPad and no problem whatsoever searching Google by, a microphone, tap, and talk. FGTV, please. So it's like, I think between those two things, the question, of course, is how long will it be before there's a microphone in absolutely everything? But, you know, it seemed to me, this seems utterly inevitable.
Agreed.
Mm. And apparently lots and lots of manufacturers at CES agree, because they are building it into all sorts of things. And interestingly, I suppose, at this early stage in the game, Siri and Cortana are really not part of the conversation. It was mostly Alexa, and apparently Google spent like $1 billion. I'm just making that up, but they spent a ton of money to have Hey Google signs just everywhere. Like everywhere you looked, in the hotels, in the airport, everywhere, mm-hmm. all over Las Vegas, just said Hey Google everywhere. And, you know, and
sorry, I don't know how to do that yet.
Oh, I forgot to shut off that.
Oh, you didn't like, mute her.
I thought it was Alexa. I was like, what? So,
Other voices sound so similar.
Yeah, when you hear them back to back, they're a little bit different, but yeah.
Yeah, over the microphone, it sounds very similar.
Yeah, they're very, very similar. It's interesting, though, there are certain things that they, one of them will respond in a much more verbose way that I find distasteful to particular queries. Mm-hmm. So, like, what's the weather? Google does a better quick answer than that, but Alexa's a lot better at reminder confirmations, whatever. You know, they have their different personalities, they have different capabilities, and I presume, and actually this is where I was going with it, it doesn't seem like it's going to be a winner-take-all type of situation. I think that it's reasonably, if the device has a microphone already, why not have both? You know, like, so if you're a third party, like you're Bose, and you have a set of speakers, and you're selling these, like, speakers,
mm-hmm. why not respond to either one?
Yeah, why not put them both in? Who cares? Like, you know, multiple personality disorder in your speakers. But why not do it? Who cares?
They have different keywords. Might as well.
Right. And it seems like some people are doing that. I don't know if, I mean, I know some companies are partnered with both Amazon and Google on voice assistants. What I don't know is if they're independent products and you buy one, you know, like these set of speakers has Google inside, these set of speakers has Alexa inside,
right.
Or if they're both baked into everything. I don't, you know, like maybe Google or Amazon, they're always in a slap fight. So maybe they don't allow both to be in the same thing or whatever. But it strikes me as like the Intel inside speaker of the future. It's going to be like Alexa inside.
Alexa inside, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Intel, you hear about these zero-day chip bugs?
Yes, I've heard about them, and I've been responding to emails about them and watching videos about them, and yeah, it's...
So this is super duper geeky. It's probably beyond it's beyond me. Like, I barely even understand. Like, I understand Meltdown. I don't really understand Spectre. All I really know is that the chip makers need to fix it.
Yeah, TLDR, it's a hardware problem.
Yeah, which that's what I find worth mentioning. Yeah. So, like, you know, we're on the team that says, the economics are such that it's feasible to put a chip in everything and connect everything to the internet, therefore that will happen. So what happens when there's a fundamental flaw? And this is accidental. You know, what happens when there's a purposely a flaw at that layer of the stack? Mm-hmm. Oof. And so here's another thing that should have occurred to me a lot sooner in my career. A lot of exploits that you hear about require access to the hardware. So like if my laptop has some sort of bug on it or something, or I'm trying to think, or you heard of this a lot early on with phones, like the phone security wasn't good, especially on Android in some of the early versions. So people would be like, oh, well, Android's so insecure. And I'm like, yeah, but the exploit that you're describing right now requires that you have my phone.
Yeah.
So,
like if you want to like bypass the fingerprint sensor on your laptop to get access to your documents or things, you still need a laptop.
Right. And so I kind of always just, not always, but in many cases, I would roll my eyes at some of the sort of shrill, hyperactive, like the sky is falling type of, especially around early Android. It was like, yeah. I was like, come on. If you lost your phone and you don't have a password on it, you're screwed five ways from Sunday. Never mind this. Like, if they can get in your email, your life is over. Never mind, like, some, like, you know, whatever wacky bug in the operating system. That is, like, a joke compared. So, okay. So I kind of always, I have this, like, eye roll reaction whenever the bug requires access to the hardware. Because I'm like, you've got bigger problems if somebody has your laptop. So, or whatever. But, you know, fast forward to the future that we now live in where, like, I don't know what percentage, but I'm, you know, the just an incredible number of critically important secure web services are hosted on shared machines in the cloud. But in the cloud is like some giant server room in North Carolina, and you know, it's just some computer that a whole bunch of people have access to. It's like, because you get this multi-tenant architecture where 100 companies are using the same chip. That's where the problem happens, because Meltdown, I sort of understand, it's like, in order to optimize the speed of data retrieval, which is obviously an important thing, they'll do stuff in parallel. And one of the things they do in parallel is one process will go get the data you requested, and a separate process will go find out if you have access to that data. And then if you don't have access to data, it'll tell the first process to throw away the data, don't return it. But that moment between when the first process gets it and the security bit is like, oh, no, wait, don't give it back to them. You can act, traces of that are left in cache, which apparently you can read somehow. So it's just, you know, best intentions, like, oh, how could we make this faster? Well, we could, you know, do a bunch of things at once and then just not return the data if they don't have permission to see it. But at least we'll get the data and we'll be ready to give it back. So it's the kind of thing a developer would think of, or an engineer would think of.
It is.
Let's do it in parallel instead of always waiting and doing it serial. So, yeah, so I get that. And they can fix it, and it causes things to slow down, you know, a little bit. The Spectre thing I don't quite understand, but my understanding is the difference. Well, maybe, I mean, can you explain it? It sounds like you've been reading up on it.
No, I've to be honest, I've kind of, like, Meltdown makes a lot more sense to me, too.
So. Yeah. So Meltdown is like something that somebody decided to do. It was a trade-off, as there are millions of trade-offs when you're building stuff. So it was a trade-off. They were like, oh, this will work. And, you know, probably not imagining bad actors and probably not imagining such a huge infrastructure of lots of people on the same running programs that should not be talking to each other on the same CPU.
Right.
So the thing with the Spectre bug, which I can't explain, but smarter people than me have, who I trust, indicate that it's a fundamental flaw with the way the hardware is. And my understanding is there's not an obvious fix. So it's just like, okay, we just need to do our best going forward to prevent this farther up the stack somehow. Now, I don't know any more than that, but.
Right. Now I do know, like I have seen hosting companies like I believe Linode and I think AWS has to some extent as well been like installing security updates that are supposed to protect against this like farther up the stack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it is a fundamental flaw in the chipset design.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I've got a bunch of friends who are like DevOps wizards that are just sort of like commiserating about, you know, the increased CPU usage, and none of them are freaking out that the security hole hasn't been patched. It's just like they're all freaking out about the, you know, certain applications do have a noticeable slowdown because of the performance hit. But anyway, when you imagine chips in everything, you know, chips in your car that's driving you around, chips in your implant that's, I don't know, regulating your heart rate or your insulin delivery or mm-hmm. your bionic leg or your eye or, you know, in the alarm clock next to your bed with cameras and, you know, cameras and microphones and actuators and everything in everything. And you know, so fast forward 5-10 years,
that gamma ray laser that's doing brain surgery on you right now,
what's the retinal projection? Is that what it's called? Where like images are sort of shot into your eye. So if mm-hmm. you have a pair of glasses, Vizix, I think they're called. This was a CES. Yeah.
It's the way Google Glass worked.
But
Google Glass used this, didn't it?
I think it's a little different.
Okay.
I think Google Glass had a projector in the arm that went into a prism that you could see. So it was like a screen that you were looking at, but it appeared to be in the distance. I think this Vizix thing has a camera pointed at your eye instead of your eye looking at something that's reflecting the camera, which I believe is... Maybe it's the same thing. Maybe it's just a difference of where the thing's positioned. But the issue is that what's interesting is that these things are getting great reviews from people who are familiar with the matter, and like, wow, these things are pretty cool. They look a lot more like normal glasses than Google Glass, which didn't look like glasses at all. They're sort of like not overly chunky, kind of hipster Ray-Bans-y looking thing. Mm-hmm. And they really work, but they make a different choice than Google Glass. The Glass was like, this is going to be up and to the right. This is like, you look up at it. And this new one, I'm pretty sure it's, the company's called Vizix or Vixes, one of those two, but it's, we'll link to it, of course, but the it's really for mixed reality. So it is presented over your vision. And, you know, like around the edge, but it's like, you don't need to look around to find it. It's like there. So, you know, it's got touch on the side and voice and okay. So now that's getting pretty, that's not an implant yet, but that's pretty close to it's pretty personal space. And mm-hmm, if you imagine someone, I think it does have a camera too. Pretty sure it does. Could be wrong about that. Maybe they learned their lesson from Google, but if you can imagine like that being not secure, all of a sudden you're like, oh, this is not secure. My life pretty much depends on like me getting through my day, but depends on me having this thing on. But now this news story turns out, oh, the, I don't know, some government has a backdoor into the ARM chips, you know, globally you know, whatever. And when I say ARM, I didn't mean like your limb. I meant like
ARM is the chipset.
Right. And it's like, oh, okay, whoops. It's almost like finding out you have a disease.
Right.
Because you could take them off, of course, but I mean, if you had an actual implant, you couldn't. If you could take them off, I mean, if you had an actual implant and it turned out that there was a bug or a virus, all of a sudden those two sort of like, those two terms are getting a lot more literal, like a lot more like the same thing.
Yeah, they are, aren't they? It would be like, yeah, you have a medical condition now.
Right. Yeah, it's like you said, like robot surgery. Okay, okay. There's a third order idea for you.
Yeah.
A future assassination by, you know, assassinating some president by taking over a robotic surgeon.
Robotic surgeon, yeah. Oh, man. You know, I had been working on stuff for Third Order, and every single idea I had been working on, and there was like four of them, literally every single one was in like either the later part of season three or season four of Black Mirror. And I was just like, ugh.
Brutal.
Yeah, like almost the exact same plot and everything. Like, and I mean, I've done much better than I probably could, certainly, but still, like, just like the gist of it, like San Junipero. It's like, yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Back to the drawing board.
Back to the drawing board. Well, that it's still what's going to happen. Like, that's what we were sort of started off saying. You know, you're like, you got to write these stories fast because the reality is going to catch up to you before it's not going to be fiction.
Yeah. It's like I was watching all these and every single one of them was like, okay, I had that idea 3 months ago. It's like, I've been working on that. I had that. And like, and then we get to the episode with literal terrifying robot dogs. And I'm like, are they listening through my device, through Alexa?
I know. Whenever I say it, just like on that privacy thing, whenever somebody does say to me, like, I don't want to have that microphone, you know, in my bedroom or in my living room, and I point to their phone, I'm like, you got a microphone in your pocket, dude. Who cares?
Yeah.
So anyway, I know that's a bummer. So you know what could happen? You ever go back and watch like an old movie that was, that the whole plot depended on the fact that cell phones didn't exist? Like, the whole movie wouldn't have happened if people had cell phones, because the entire thing is predicated on the notion that they can't talk to each other because they're physically distant.
Right.
And if you could just send somebody a text message, the whole movie would evaporate.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So it could be, you know, and then, okay, so then you fast forward to like, I don't know, any typical... Oh, I almost just embarrassed myself bad. Any typical like current cop show, like Hill Street Blues, or
that's not current.
That's like from the '80s, I think. So, yeah. But shows have technology in them, but by accident. Like there's a whole, you know, there are tons of like Brady Bunch episodes where people talking on the phone was part of the show, like on a landline phone. And they're, you know, like the Sherlock TV show, there's like text messaging is a big piece of that show. And every episode, they're like texting all over the place because you couldn't not do that. Like, it would be unrealistic to have a bunch of people who are in the current setting that don't text each other. Like, it wouldn't.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. Like, for them not to be pulling their phones out all the time. You'd have to come up with a reason why they weren't. You know, like the classic, like there was a phase in the sort of in the late cell phone era, every horror movie, there would be some scene where
something would happen to their phone.
Yeah. The protagonist would be like, I can't get a signal, because the writers had to explain why they didn't just call for help.
Right. Right. It's not like they didn't suddenly just like cut the phone line anymore. It was.
Yeah. It used to be cut the phone line. Right.
Yeah.
It's like a plot device. You have to take the cell phone out of the game.
Right.
So like Sherlock, they couldn't make sense with the story. So they're like, okay, they've got all of these, it just happens. So maybe what'll happen is people will just start writing sci-fi, that stuff that's probably going to happen soon. And then the stuff will happen and the show will just turn from a sci-fi cop story to a cop story.
A cop story. Yeah.
So what I'm getting around to is like, maybe if you just don't worry about it being sci-fi and just write a cool story that uses a lot of futuristic technology, it'll be a little bit more evergreen. Like
eventually it'll be, yeah.
it'll just be like a regular...
regular story. Yeah, right. Maybe.
Yeah, like eventually, you know, Neuromancer won't be sci-fi anymore. Like on a long enough timeline, it'll just be a story. Oh, man. So, geez, I don't know. We also have listed Facebook in some of the things we're going to talk about today. And I suppose we could kind of segue it in, because a lot of these, as these devices and things get closer and closer to our more intimate, closer and closer to our cortex, mm-hmm. and all of our friends and family and all of that, they could have an emotional effect on us, couldn't they?
They could, and they could affect the stuff that appears on social media and the things we're sharing, and
Speaking of,
did you hear that?
Yeah, I can hear bzzz.
I don't know, it's from someone, some number in Tennessee. I don't recognize it, so yeah. They get hung up on.
Good. So, yeah, I mean, so if you imagine somebody taking over the your part of your reality, so, okay, someone hacks into your glasses that are telling you, I don't know, how many likes you have on Instagram or whatever, and, you know, you get a dopamine hit every time one of those little notifications comes up, then they could mess with you. They could literally mess with your chemical release in your body by sending false messages, you know? So, sort of a stretch, but the Facebook made an announcement recently that they're going to change the algorithm that decides what you get to see in your newsfeed, because they, you know, on the surface level, they're saying that, you know, they do these internal studies on the behavior that certain architectural changes make in the user base, and that this sort of preponderance of video is mm-hmm. causing a lot of passive engagement. I don't know if engagement's the right word, but passive consumption of content, and it's basically all from brands. So it's like, or companies or whatever. And it's, so the amount of time spent by a particular person in the, you know, 20 hours a day that they spend on Facebook is more and more passively consuming video from some brand, whether it's a bunch, you know, five guys that do comedy on YouTube, or it's Bed Bath & Beyond, but they're not interacting with their friends and family. They're just watching a video and, you know, alone. And they said that, you know, Zuckerberg, to his credit, I'm sure this isn't the only motivation, but to his credit, he's like, look, this is not what Facebook is about. We, you know, friends and family is the core of what we are. We want people to feel more connected. We believe that'll make the world a better place. Maybe we're wrong, but that's what we believe. And sitting there watching videos from Starbucks or whoever is not connecting people. It's ads. Whether it's paid for or not paid for, it's ads. And, you know, so all the advertisers are like, wait a minute, what?
Wait, what? Yeah. Yeah, this sounds very, like, from a money perspective, maybe not great.
Yes, which is why plenty of people are taking it with a huge grain of salt, because they assume he has something up his sleeve. But, mm-hmm. you know, like, you can't just have a public company being like, yeah, we're going to make some changes that decrease revenue. That's, like, literally illegal. So, you know, but if you look at the long game, obviously, if all the people leave Facebook, there'd be nothing to sell. So of course, he wants it to be actually engaging. He wants it to be a positive force. So, because if it's not, and it becomes generally accepted that Facebook is bad for you, then overnight, the audience could fall off a cliff. Like, the user base would just go somewhere else, because there are plenty of places to go.
Right, and or they could decide, oh, all I do is watch videos here. I don't really want to deal with all this other noise. I'll go to some other video platform.
Right. Yeah, I'll just go to YouTube.
Yeah.
So, right. So it does. That's true too. I didn't even think of that, because it's not really their core competency, presenting videos to people. Like, if they start competing on that as their main thing, they're going to lose. Well, they've got a really, Google has a huge head start on them.
Right.
So, you know, I'm sure that there are all sorts of good reasons, obvious and not obvious, for them to make this change, or they wouldn't do it, because it certainly has, if nothing else, freaked out people who have paid them millions of dollars. So that's not, so on the surface, there seems to be an obvious downside to it. But the bigger idea, whatever they decide to do, whatever it does to advertisers, I don't really care, but the bigger idea that Zuckerberg and probably a small set of engineers in Silicon Valley have that much control over the emotions of 2 billion people is really weird.
It is.
I mean, we could just, we're going to change your experience of your day.
Yeah, we're going to change how you use this because it affects your mood. So we're now going to control your mood a little more.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and it's like, it does, you know, I was going to be like, well, let's drill into the word control there. It does kind of, I think at a certain point, it's such a large scale. They have so many people that it does become control if there's a clear cause and effect. And I feel like they have enough people that they can determine clear causes and effects. So like, if we do this, that will happen. Then it does turn into control, even though you have autonomy. You still have personal autonomy, at least today, as far as we know. We still have personal autonomy, and we could just shut it off or delete the app or whatever. But if they have enough data to know that they can create an effect by doing a particular thing, it's pretty freaking close to control. You know, it's like, if I turn this knob, these people are all going to cry. If I turn this knob, they're all going to laugh.
Right. And if I turn this knob, they're going to not want to stop using my program or not want to look away.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I mean, there are teams of people. The joke is like, oh, the smartest minds of our generation are working around the clock to try and figure out how to get us to click on more ads.
Yeah.
And it's like, they're good at it. It's addictive. You know, the notifications on a smartphone are addictive. I don't feel it as much. Well, I feel it, but I just delete stuff. I'm just like, I'm taking Twitter and Facebook off my phone. Fixed. In fact, the other night we were just sort of like sitting, it was freezing and we had a fire in the fireplace. We were sitting there. Erica's knitting her face off. And I'm like just sort of reading, you know, checking my phone and like saying, you know, periodically, like, saying like, oh, check this out or whatever. And she's like, you've been dropping a lot of F-bombs tonight. Like, and ever since we have kids, I like, you know, I used to swear a lot. I suppose everybody swears a certain amount, but after we had kids, I pretty much erased it from my vocabulary as much as possible, because you just accidentally come out. So I just try to never swear. But she's like, you're dropping a lot of F-bombs tonight. And I was like, yeah, I am. And I was like, you know why? And she's like, why? I was like, because I'm reading the news. And I'm getting like super agitated. I was so mad. I was on Twitter. I was on Facebook. I was looking, I was like going to following links to like the New York Times. And I was just like, I was so mad. And none of it, not one bit of it was helpful, like, or even meaningful to my life in any way.
Right. None of it directly related to you in any way.
Nothing. No, it's all some story about somebody somewhere who I don't know, who did something that I think was they shouldn't have done. Oh, right. How does that help me? Like, you know, people will be like, because I pretty much opt out of news, and people are like, well, how do you know what's going on? And I'm like, who cares what's going on? I look around, like,
yeah,
you know, and it's not like, you know how hard it is to not hear what's going on?
It's really hard.
Yeah, it's basically impossible. So, you know, I was joking with Erica. I said something like, oh, I think it's the Super Bowl this weekend, because we live near the Patriots Stadium, and the Trader Joe's she goes to is the one right in the parking lot of Foxborough Stadium. And I was like, oh, you might not want to go. If you're going to that Trader Joe's in Plainville, you might not want to go. I think it's the Super Bowl. And she looks at me like, how did you know it was the Super Bowl? You know, that it was coming up. And I was like, because the packaging on my Bud Light had said something about the Super Bowl. So I was like, I get my sports news from Bud Light packaging.
Right, yeah.
It's not exactly real time, but it's impossible to not know that Halloween's coming, or Father's Day, or the Super Bowl, or that there was some actual big news story, because you just hear people talking about it in the hallways.
Yeah.
I don't need to know about some, you know, in some embarrassment that somebody somewhere suffered. You know what I mean? It's just, I don't know. So, okay. So to try and tie it back together, because I could probably go all day on that.
Right.
You're like, yeah. Well, this happened to you. Well, I don't know how exactly, but the notification you got on your phone, like you woke up to a scary notification on your phone.
Oh yeah. 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 Like yesterday. Gosh, was it yesterday? I think it was day before yesterday. Yeah, like half asleep me wakes up to and the first thing I did was turn my phone on to check a notification or to check the time, and like there was a notification there but a news headline, and it was like, two dead, several more injured in Kentucky high school shooting, and my half asleep brain is going, wait a minute, I have a kid at a Kentucky high school at this moment.
Yeah. So. Freak out. Yeah.
Yeah, it woke me up real quick.
Yeah, and the Hawaii thing. I mean, you heard that story, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what if, I guess that was an accident, but what if that became a more commonplace thing? And what if it was something that was more personal and tough to opt out of than a push notification? Mm-hmm. You know, so you've got some glasses on your face. I mean, there's stories of people following Google Maps right into a lake.
Yeah.
And like, what if that's on your face? Somebody hacks it. Some bad actor gets on your face. It would be so easy to manipulate your emotions in a subtle way. It would be so easy to like, imagine how powerfully a hacker could social engineer you if they had access to your, like, whatever, your goggle visor. You know, it would be, it's like the more of reality that exists on the chip and less in the sort of physical real world, because the physical real world's pretty hard to control. You know, it takes a lot of work. Right. It's like the difference between Minecraft and survival mode and Minecraft and creative mode. You know, you really have to work in survival mode to like collect things. It's harder. It's much harder, and it's like not worth it. It's expensive, basically. Mm-hmm. And if it's not expensive, it's a lot less expensive to alter a digital reality. So if you imagine that there is like this huge landscape of virtual reality, not in the VR headset sense, but just this digital life that we're leading more and more. And it's really, really malleable, and it's really susceptible to being affected by companies who have our permission to do so, basically, like Facebook and Google, Amazon and Netflix, and they're all trying to get us to do things. They're all trying to, even if they think, oh, it's going to make the world a better place, and it's going to make you a better person.
They're still trying to influence you.
They're still trying to influence you. I mean, every conversation you have, well, that's an exaggeration, but I mean, everyone's in a negotiation, you know, 100 times a day with kids, spouse, boss, employees, clerk. I mean, everyone you talk to is sort of a little bit of a negotiation going on there.
Yeah, so, I'm trying to get a word in edgewise right now.
See what happens when we take a week off? It's like diarrhea. It just keeps coming.
No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
No, I'm the worst. I can't help it. You have to just yell at me or something.
Yeah. Speaking of stop button problems, we need to get you one.
I know. We should probably move on. It's been, how long have we been on? Oh my God. All right, cool. So there's no wrap up here.
I killed it, didn't I?
Yeah, there's no wrap up.
Sorry.
It's just the note I don't want to leave it on is like a fear note. It's like, it's cool. Like all of this connectivity is great. It's just, man, going so fast and it's so big. And it's like, I don't feel like the wheels are coming off or anything like that, but
you can definitely see the influence.
Yeah. The pots are clanging. That's for sure. Yeah. All right. I'll shut up.
I had another little tiny interesting fourth bit that I was going to throw in that would have fit well, but we've gone on for a long time now.
So go ahead. We could probably, edit out half the crap.
I would just say, speaking of videos and YouTube and that sort of thing, YouTube, I just found it interesting. YouTube has made recent changes to their partnership program.
Mm-hmm.
And they have this thing. Have you heard about it?
Yes.
Yeah. They have this service called Google Preferred, which is basically we trust you. We're going to, all of your stuff's going to be monetized, and we're going to sell to big advertisers. We're going to sell them on your content first and that sort of thing. And they've recently made changes to where I think they've hired like ridiculous amounts of people to do this, that anything in Google Preferred, the videos submitted to YouTube through Google Preferred is now going to be manually verified before it goes to monetization. Yeah. And I just thought it was really interesting that a company so focused on AI has gone, we're going to manually verify this stuff to please our advertisers rather than.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just found it really, it felt like backwards for Google.
Yeah. It's surprising. I mean, do you know the Logan Paul story? Like what? I don't want to talk about it. People can Google it if they want, but
people doing horrible things.
Exactly. Right. But incredibly popular. Like I think the most popular YouTuber.
Yeah. Which is sad, but
yeah. So anyway, I never thought of it like that. Like that they, you know, their core competency.
Is becoming
AI and for them to basically do what Yahoo thought they were going to beat Google with way back in the day, which is manual curation. But hey, this is like where Google's bread is buttered. They can't lose advertisers. If they have a flight, boom, you know, you can talk about like organizing the world's information all day long, but they're an advertising agency, a company.
Yeah, they are.
Cool. All right. So we'll stick a fork in it. I'll try and edit out and have my BS. well, it was good talking to you though.
Yeah. You should do this every week.
It was like a therapy session.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. You owe me $300 now.
Awesome. Well, it was well worth it.
How does that make you feel?
Tell me about your mother. All right, cool. So that's it for this week. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we hope you join us again next week for Terrifying Robot Dog. Bye.
Bye.